It is Racing Pulse on this Tuesday, and we are pushing Matt's news back a little bit because we've got an important chat with the chairman, Brian Kruger, and then Matt will come towards the end of the chat after Brian Kruger, and we will go through his news and get his thoughts on the discussion points with Brian, because the chairman of Racing Victoria, there is so much to chat about. The state of racing and what the future looks like, and it's a great pleasure to welcome the chairman in. Brian, appreciate your time this morning. How are you?
No problems, Michael. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well indeed. And I want to start with some really good news and breaking news, because an announcement today in conjunction with the state government, also Melbourne University, is that we have the purchase of a PET scanner and a new standing CT scanner, which will be used at the University of Melbourne and also another venue, maybe Cranbourne, for the prevention of limb injuries with horses. And I know there's been a big focus on this with the Spring Carnival, internationals, and these two new scanners are certainly going to be well received, no doubt, Brian.
I hope so, Michael. Look, first of all, I want to thank the state government and obviously the support of University of Melbourne as well in making this happen. I think, it's been interesting with the use of these scanners through the Spring Carnival initially, and then what we've learned from that, and you go, well, why aren't we doing this sort of thing throughout the year? And when we made the decision that was important that we did it throughout the year, we've got the support of the government and been able to purchase these two new scanners. As you said, they'll be in different locations, which hopefully gives more trainers the opportunity to access them. And Racing Victoria actually subsidises the use of them as well, so we're trying to make it very affordable for trainers to make sure that they're doing everything they can to protect the welfare of their horses.
So $1.9 million altogether, $700,000 Racing Victoria, $900,000 from the state government, and the remainder from the University of Melbourne. Just with the PET scanner, can you explain the difference between a PET scanner and the CT scanner?
Oh, you're going to be testing my veterinary skills. Probably best to get somebody like Grace Forbes on. I do know they do different things. I think, and look, this will be very, very much in layman's terms, CT scanners can detect fractures or small fractures. PET scanners, I understand, can detect issues with bones that may not necessarily be presenting as a fracture. So they do different things, but both obviously designed to prevent, catastrophic injuries in horses before they occur. So great addition. The PET scanner is world-leading technology. My understanding is there are only three or four of them in the world, and I think the others are all located in the US. So, it's certainly something that'll be putting us at the forefront of equine welfare in this part of the world.
And reading about it, the other advantage of the PET scanner or the PET scanner is that it requires less sedation than what the scintigraphy does currently.
Yes, so, that's correct. It's a similar thing to the scintigraphy, but with a lot less lot less invasive, and it's also a portable machine as well. So, just again another level of care for our horses, which is very important. The other thing I should talk about, Michael, just quickly, is with the subsidy, we've been running a bit of a trial program subsidy and to enable local trainers to get their horses scanned, and we've had something like 130 horses go through the program, and about 40 of those have actually identified issues. It's great that we save even one horse, but to know that we're having that sort of impact on the welfare of that number of horses in the state, I think is fantastic. And these two new investments will help us do even more of that, which is great.
Well, there's no doubt about that. So they'll be operational from 2023.
Yep, that's correct.
Yep.
I think that the goal is we had a few issues with the CT scanner during the Spring Carnival last year, so we will have the new CT scanner here. So if we do have any issues with the current one, it can be used for parts and so on, but won't be fully operational until 2023.
Well, it's going to be good news for a lot of local trainers that use that as well. Brian, we'll get on to what the hot topic has been for the last couple of months, and I don't think anyone has missed the debate that has raged around the redevelopment of the Caulfield Racecourse. The inner track is what the MRC is pushing for, and there's been a lot of debate by participants. Have a listen to a snapshot of what people have been saying.
We don't need another dog track in the city, on another inside track on the inside of Caulfield. If they're going to redo it, make one big, great track.
We want to race at Caulfield 40 to 45 times. The second track, or more racing at Caulfield, has been supported by Racing Victoria 2 years ago.
I don't understand the inner track at Caulfield, I've got to be brutally honest with you. It seems like it's almost being built for the purpose of dealing with the Moonee Valley night meetings whilst Moonee Valley's being rebuilt, rather than for any long-term strategic benefit.
New track can handle 15 to 20, so I guess the question is, are we better off running those second and third tier paddock meetings in the middle of winter, or are they better off at a second track at Caulfield? And I think if you ask trainers and owners and punters, I think a lot of them would sway to being on the second track at Caulfield rather than synthetics up, an hour out of Melbourne.
Caulfield is a terrific circuit, but there are some elements of that track that could be improved, need to be improved, and if we can improve them as part of this process, let's really examine that. Redevelopment of a single track, which is a preference, can it be done? And if it can be done, then let's power on.
Oh, we're talking weeks. We need to make a decision. As I said, this has been going on for 18 months.
So that's Joss Blanksby, the CEO of the MRC, and the leading trainers and jockeys, representatives and owners as well. Brian, it certainly has been a big talking point. And I suppose the first question, the number one question from Racing Victoria's standpoint is, do you favour the two-track, inner-track policy or one larger track? Because I know Giles came out on the 29th of April and said that Racing Victoria supports it. So is that the current stance still, Brian?
Yeah, look, Michael, maybe if I can just talk through the rationale behind our position, but the short answer to your question is yes. The position that Giles outlined is still our view at the moment. Obviously, and the grabs you've just heard illustrate this, it is a complex subject and there are lots of issues to consider. But just talking through, I guess, the thought process. Obviously, we've got training has now left Caulfield. There is an opportunity to utilise the land that is immediately inside the current course proper. So we can either use it or not use it at all. And given the location, the quality of all the facilities that are at Caulfield now and certainly that will be there in the future, we obviously think it's a good idea to look to utilise that land, especially when you overlay the outage at Moonee Valley from 2025. So the question then becomes, if we are going to utilise it, what's the best way to utilise it? And this, I think, is where a lot of the debate has been about whether or not we should be looking at widening the course proper or maintaining current course proper and constructing a new inner track. And again, you've had people like Jason Kerr on and others who can talk through a lot more expert way than I can around some of the reasons why the inner track is preferred. But I guess from my perspective, you do have significantly increased flexibility with the two tracks in terms of maintenance and renovations and watering issues, etc. If you did widen the current track, it obviously introduces complexity with start points and with the rail movements that would be needed to get back to where the course proper is now. There's no question there'll be wear on the course proper that wouldn't otherwise occur. I think there are concerns with track bias with a wider track in terms of how the watering process would need to occur and from how the boom watering works. And obviously with the two tracks you do have versus, I think, the preference of the jockeys, which is to widen it to 45 metres, there is the ability to run more meetings with the two tracks. You've got a higher cost, longer outage period. And so I think there's not just one issue which lends itself, I think, to the two tracks being the preferred outcome, but there are many issues to consider, and I know there are some disadvantages with the inside track versus the one wider track, but I think on balance, our view is the inner track is the better way to go. So I think, Dan, and this is probably a big part of the conversation as well, is do construct the inner track, what is it used for? There's been a lot of debate about this, but we're talking, roughly an extra 15 meetings, and clearly while Moonee Valley is out of action, it will help us cope with the Moonee Valley outage. But then I think what we create is a number of different options for utilising that inner track. And Melbourne Race Club have already come out and said the inner track won't be used for any of their premium meetings or Saturday Metro meetings or those sort of things. But these are the sort of things I think it could be useful. There may be a small number of meetings that might be transferred from other Melbourne Racing Club locations, and whether that's Sandown Lakeside or Mornington, time will tell. Synthetic racing, the facts are we've actually significantly decreased the amount of synthetic racing in this state from 2016. We've gone from 48 meetings to 30. I think the preference, my understanding is certainly the preference of jockeys, trainers and others, is that they would like to see that continue to come down over time. So there is an option there that that this inner track could help us deal with reducing the amount of synthetic racing that we have. When we have, as you know, in this state, we have a lot of issues with weather. We have tracks that sometimes have issues with drainage. So it will give us flexibility around moving locations of race meetings during the difficult winter months. It will clearly also give us options for if we do, and there's been no decisions made around this yet, but if we did decide to increase the quantum of night racing, it gives us an option to manage to utilise this inner track to be able to do that. And then you get into areas like more turf to be able to conduct more trials and jump out. So I think, this track won't be seen in the same light as Flemington or Sandown Hillside or Ballarat or some of those bigger wide open tracks, but I think it's very easy to see how an inside track can add a lot of value to racing in the state in the longer term for a relatively small investment, given that the land is already there and, as I said, it's in a great location with great facility. So, sorry, that's a long-winded sort of dissertation, but hopefully that helps you and the listeners, I guess, understanding where our current thinking is.
So there's a fair bit to break down there. First of all, how difficult a decision is it? And to be honest, is it a decision that may be looked on, I suppose, poorly by a number of participants, because the trainers, the jockeys and the owners have all been at one against this move, yet it seems that Racing Victoria and the MRC are keen to plough on. So how much weight do you give to the participants when they are saying, this is not what we want when we race there, we ride there, we train there?
A lot of weight. It actually weighs very, very heavily on me, and I know the rest of the Racing Victoria team when we have our participants with a different point of view. So I guess all we can do is listen to all of the experts on the various range of issues. I guess we have a bit of a window into the future about what the track may and may not be used for, which obviously, as I've just outlined, does influence our thinking around what the better option might be. As I said, we understand we're not looking to replace Flemington or those other big wide open tracks that jockeys love riding on. This track has certain uses that I think it will be ideal for. But, as I said, wide range of issues. You've just heard Chris Wallace speaking about how it can be used and how it can add value. So there are different views out there, but we do understand a lot of our participants at this point don't agree with it. I do think we and the Melbourne Racing Club have got a job to do to continue to talk with them, explain the reasons, deal with the feedback, listen to the feedback, tweak things if we need to. But ultimately, as I said, at the moment, this is our position. And I know the Melbourne Racing Club have got another meeting with trainers planned for, I think it's tomorrow. And then I know they are planning on discussing with their committee later in the month all of that feedback and any tweaks that might need to be made to their plans as a result of that. And then, as Josh has said, a decision on moving forward with the construction of the inner track needs to be made fairly soon if it's going to happen.
People have questioned why Pakenham and Cranbourne can't pick up the slack of Moonee Valley when it's been renovated, and is the decision to have an inner track at Caulfield almost like a stopgap to cover Moonee Valley while it's been redeveloped?
No, look, I've heard people talk about that, and look, if this inner track wasn't possible, clearly we'd be looking at other options for dealing with the Moonee Valley outage. So it will help with that, but as I've said, there are many other options that will create beyond the Moonee Valley outage that we think add value. The interesting thing I'd say with the likes of Cranbourne and Pakenham being able to pick up the night racing, those two, they could potentially take part of the load, but those two turf tracks are pretty well fully utilised already. So it would require, I think, further shuffling of meetings from Cranbourne and Pakenham if that was the way we were going to go with that. But I would, as I said, just repeat that the Moonee Valley dealing, this inner track is not just being constructed to deal with the outage of Moonee Valley. It's part of the rationale, but I think there is long-term value for those other options that I spoke about earlier that make this the right thing to do.
One of those is increased night racing, twilight racing. I think at the moment there's about 54 night meetings, and Matt Hyland last night said on racing.com, and I know Andrew Nicol has said that the participants are at a tipping point. They think there's enough night racing. Is the plan in the future to increase night racing even more? So you've got possibly a Wednesday night meeting at Caulfield, Thursday Pakenham, Friday Cranbourne or Moonee Valley?
Look, we've obviously had this discussion many times, and we have a lot of discussions behind the scenes with the jockeys and trainers about the impact of night racing. And we've done some things to help mitigate that impact, but we get that. But they also understand that, you know, customer demand and a range of other issues would suggest that an increase in night racing may be beneficial. But we're not going to do that unless we've got the support and the understanding of jockeys and trainers doing that. It's one of the issues that will be discussed in the, I think Matt Stewart refers to it as the mysterious green paper. It's one of the issues where we'll be doing a lot of consultation on over the next 12 months or so to work out exactly where we head with night and twilight racing. But again, if we did decide to increase night racing, just repeat, no decision's been made at the moment, then having this inner track lit at Caulfield gives us an option to be able to do that. So, That's sort of where it's at, Michael. No decisions, but it gives us some options.
And is 15 meetings per year the number of meetings you want to be raced on this inner track?
Oh, look, I think we've got to play it by ear. What I'm hearing is it could stand 15 to 20. I've just run through, I think, four or five different examples of where those race meetings could come from. So no firm decisions yet, but it'll be that order of magnitude, I would imagine.
And the MRC in the past have said that it's got this redevelopment nothing to do with the potential sale of Sandown or what the future of Sandown may be, but would there be a likelihood of maybe possible Sandown meetings being relocated to the inner track? And if MRC has an inner track, their major outer track, plus Sandown, plus Mornington, they're probably looking in excess of 100 meetings a season. Is that sustainable to have that many races at the one club?
I think it is. I don't see any issue with that issue. The question around Sandown, and I think we've said this a number of times, this decision about an inner track is completely independent of any potential sale of Sandown. Again, the examples I walked through before had nothing to do with the closure of Sandown. We run 35 meetings a year at Sandown, so an inner track at Caulfield, particularly if it's been used for other things as well, is not going to enable that to happen. So we've said many times the Sandown issue's got a long time to play out. And at the end of the day, both we and the Melbourne Racing Club have agreed that any decision in relation to Sandown will be made, you know, in the best overall interest of the industry at that particular time.
One of the other issues that's been debated is in regards to the Caulfield redevelopment, the crossings and the possibility of tunnels. So I think it's an extra cost of around about $10 million if they bring tunnels into the redevelopment. We know all the money that's been spent on equine welfare. Do Racing Victoria want to see the introduction of those tunnels to ensure that the track, if it is built, is the best possible track?
Yeah, look, I've understood some of the pros and cons on that. To be frank, it's an area where I still want to do a bit more digging and understanding. You know, I understand both points of view. I know that Melbourne Racing Club have looked at lots of other examples where there are not tunnels to get access to inner tracks, and they seem to be working adequately, but I also place a lot of store in what the jockeys are saying about the impact that may have and some of their safety concerns around that. So my personal point of view, it's an area I'd like to do a bit more exploration of over the next few weeks, at this point, understand both points of view, and at some point in the near term, we'll need to make a call about which is the right way to go with that.
When is that deadline, Brian? Because Josh Blanksby said to us a few weeks ago, this decision needs to be made in weeks. And I know there's another meeting with the trainers, but if we were to call a spade a spade, if Racing Victoria's made up their mind and the MRC's made up their mind, it seems a fait accompli, doesn't it?
Well, it's within the next two or so weeks, Michael, is my understanding, for the decision to be made and then for all of the preparatory work that needs to go into being in position to start the work after this year's Spring Carnival. So it is a matter of weeks before the decision about, the track option. So it's in the near term. Now, is it fait accompli? Ultimately, I think, as I said, we're still going through discussions on, Melbourne Racing Club in particular, leading discussions still with groups like the trainers, and they'll go back to their committee with all the feedback from jockeys and trainers, etc., and what they think that means in terms of final decisions. But it is imminent.
Matt Stewart talks about this as a legacy decision, that the track will be left long after everyone that is currently in charge of racing is gone. Do you get concerned by the fact that it could be viewed as this is an economic decision which is practical now, but it doesn't take into, I suppose, consideration what could be the greater good for racing in the next 50 to 100 years?
The cost, look, I ran through all the issues before about why our view supports Melbourne Racing Club view about the inner track. Cost and time is only one of those. There are long-standing or issues that will be long-standing beyond the construction of whether it's one track or two tracks, in particular around maintenance and how the tracks will race, that, you know, for me, make me comfortable that this is the right long-term decision. So, and I think, again, one of the things which is not lost on me is the fact that the course proper itself at Caulfield will be left pretty well untouched. So we're not putting at risk any of the premium meetings, Saturday Metro meetings, the Group 1 meetings that are run on that course proper at the moment by taking this decision. You know, there is a risk that if we did change the layout of the course proper, that you do have a detrimental impact on that, and that's something that would be, you know, a difficult one to deal with. So, again, understand Matt's comments about this being a long-term issue. It's not, you know, the response here and the view here about the inner track being the preferred option is not just being driven by short-term economic issues.
With Brian Kruger, the chairman of Racing Victoria, we've had an in-depth conversation about the two tracks at Caulfield. We'll take a break. When we come back, the green paper that has been spoken about. What's the overall footprint for Victoria look like moving forward? The new CEO, Andrew Jones, will be joining racing as well in this state, and a few SMSs that are coming through as well. All that's still to come on this special edition of Racing Pulse. Welcome back to Racing Pulse. I'm joined by the chairman of Racing Victoria, Brian Kruger. I've got a few SMSs which I'll get to in a moment. Brian, a lot of talk also about this green paper, which is going to be released by Racing Victoria. Can you tell us exactly what that will contain, read the future of racing in this state?
Yeah, sure, Michael. So, look, just a bit of context. Racing Victoria and the government and the clubs have jointly invested, you know, $130 million in the last 6 years on a vast range of infrastructure projects. So it's not like we've sort of been waiting for this paper to come out before we start doing some of the things that need to be doing. And those projects include, in fact, one of the things I wanted to mention to you is we've literally just finished implementing the last track with a plastic running rail in Victoria. So now we're the only major racing state in this country which has plastic running rails at every one of its race courses. So, you know, a big safety milestone for us there. But obviously lots of other investments going into training facilities at places like Cranbourne, Ballarat, Pakenham, Flemington, etc. Lots of work going to racing infrastructure, you know, with Ballarat synthetic track, with widening places like Geelong and Kilmore. Then you look at facilities for jockeys, patrons and horses, and sustainability issues around irrigation and those sort of things. So lots of stuff already happening, but there are some major decisions over the next 5 to 10 years that do need a lot of consideration, a lot of consultation, and then decisions to get made. So we made a decision that we would prepare a green paper, and I'll talk about what that is relative to a blueprint in a minute. But it will consider a very broad range of issues, everything from the number of race meetings that we run, metro versus country locations, synthetic versus turf, day versus night, twilight, flat versus jump. It'll look at our track locations, both from a racing point of view, from a training child jump outs point of view. Obviously, look at facilities for the patrons, participants, and horses. It'll look at sustainability issues around drainage and irrigation. Obviously, one of the key things and one of the key drivers of doing this now is that we've got some pretty major reconstruction going on at some of our major venues, so managing the flow of that those projects is important as well. So, the goal is to release this green paper in the next few weeks. Go through pretty extensive consultation and studies over the next 12 months, and then following all that, produce a blueprint that gives all of the industry stakeholders some certainty around some of these major decisions that need to get made.
Does one of those decisions include this purchase of a large parcel of land, which could be used as a training facility or even another race course? What's the, I suppose, the current status of that?
Yeah, so we've been talking about that for a little while, and it is something that we have been exploring. We haven't purchased anything right at this time, but we, you know, as time goes on, we get closer and closer to sort of finalising some of the options that we're looking at. But as you said, it's if we do something, it's an opportunity that can be used for a whole range of issues, whether that's training, racing, training of the people, equine welfare issues, and a whole range of other things which we'll identify in due course. So. The short answer to your question is yes, that's part of the consideration that's going into the Green Paper, as well as how that facility that comes to pass could be utilised.
Well, I know, speaking to Andrew Nicol, the Green Paper, he says, is a great idea, but is it a little too late with this Caulfield redevelopment and other major decisions that have already been made?
Look, I don't think so. It might have shone some light on some of the issues a bit earlier, but I don't think it would have changed the decision. As I said, there's been significant investment in a whole range of infrastructure going on without this Green Paper being out there or a blueprint being there. We've been doing the things that needed to get done, but it will give us some certainty on a whole range of other issues, not just the Caulfield development, but all of those other issues that I just went through. So I understand Andrew's point of view. Probably would have liked to have seen it before we got to this point with the Caulfield redevelopment, but it covers a lot more issues than that.
Would one of those potential new developments be an improvement to Geelong? I mean, we talk about night racing and lights. They are all predominantly over the eastern side of Victoria. There doesn't seem to be many that caters for the west, especially if that could be a bigger part of the Victorian footprint moving forward.
Yeah, I think a couple of issues with Geelong. One, obviously, they lost the synthetic racing, but as part of that, we have widened the track at Geelong so that they can race their additional times on the turf track. There's obviously been a lot of investment going into the stabling infrastructure there, the float car park and those sort of things. So, you know, I wouldn't want people to get an impression that Geelong's been forgotten about. It certainly has not. There's been a lot of investment going on there. The interesting thing with this debate about night racing, I think people need to understand, is that when we look at opportunities for trainers and jockeys in different parts of the state, we look at the overall race program. We don't necessarily differentiate between, well, there's a three-year-old 1,200-metre maiden being run at the day or three-year-old 1,200-metre maiden being run at night. So the objective is to create those racing opportunities for all of our participants in different parts of the state, really irrespective of whether the race is run at day or night. So It's an interesting discussion to have about the need for the lights at Geelong. I don't think it would impact opportunities for trainers and jockeys in the west. So it's out there. It's one of the things, certainly if there was a further significant increase in night racing that's agreed with everybody over the course of coming years, then putting lights at a location at Geelong could be a possibility, but it's not on the near-term horizon.
Because the trainers, and I think it's just life in general, it's harder to get across town these days. So are we, and I
but
think Matt Holliday...
Sorry to interrupt, Michael, but that's sort of my point, is they don't just have to get across town for night racing, but the opportunities for racing we look at across the state, whether it's day or night. So we're very well aware of those logistics challenges. It's kind of ironic for me as well that not that long ago that we had everybody complaining about having to go to night meetings. Now we've got people wanting to have more night meetings. But as I said, the logistics thing's taken into account when we look at the overall programming across the state. So, yes, it might be more difficult to get to a three-year-old 1,200-metre race at Cranbourne on a Friday night, but they'll have that opportunity somewhere in the west, you know, later in the week.
I suppose there's differences in prize money, though, isn't there? Especially with those night meetings compared to a normal provincial meeting, if they're going to be raced at Caulfield, Pakenham and Cranbourne moving forward compared to...
No, at the moment, the premium country meetings, I think, are run at the same levels as the night meetings in the country, prize money-wise.
What about looking at the training hubs? Is that something that Racing Victoria thinks is what the future will be? We know what Cranbourne's development is. We know Ballarat, Pakenham, they've got more infrastructure there. Is that where you see the future of training as well?
Again, something that'll get a lot of airplay in the Green Paper, and something we're looking for consultation of. But clearly, what's happened over recent years is that we have a number of very significant training venues which have fantastic facilities. I was actually out at Cranbourne 3 or 4 weeks ago talking to a number of trainers out there, and they're all, particularly those that have more moved from Caulfield, are all very, very happy with what's been done there. I know Ballarat's the same, Pakenham's the same. So we are creating these larger venues that will cater for more horses. We have, over time, reduced the number of smaller training venues that are getting funding from Racing Victoria. Whether that reduces further, I mean, that's something that will be open for discussion. But at the moment, this, I call it a hub and spoke model, where we have, you know, half a dozen layers of training venues supported by smaller training venues that don't necessarily have all of the infrastructure but are there to cater for trainers that are located in different parts of the state. That's how it's working at the moment. It seems to be working okay, but it's one of the things that we'll be putting out there for discussion in the Green Paper.
Is rationalisation of any tracks in the Green Paper?
The discussion of that is, yes. That's what I said when we talk about, if you're specifically talking about racing.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so that issue is one of the elements being discussed. We have a view on that, which you'll see when the Green Paper comes out. Maybe I should tell you now so I don't get people too upset. Our view is that the current racing footprint is about right, so we're not talking about any major changes in the number of race venues that we have in the state, but again, it's something we want to discuss with all of the stakeholders.
And number of race meetings, do you think that's about right as well?
Boy, I won't have to put out the Green Paper if I keep doing this. The short answer is yes. But again, wanting to put it out there for discussion. And again, the paper will include our rationale for why we think that's the case. But the short answer to your question is yes, we think that number is about right.
All right, last one on this, and I'll ask you about the wagering licence. The longevity of training at Flemington, is that part of the discussion? And what's your opinion or view on how long trainers will be at Flemington?
So I won't express a view on that other than I do know that the VRC are undertaking a master planning project, which I suspect will be over the next 12 months. And clearly, the outcome of that master planning work that they are doing will feed into the blueprint that we'll be looking to put out there in the next 12 months or so.
We'll take a quick break and then I'll come back and wrap things up, Brian, and I'll touch on the new CEO and also the new wagering licence, which is going to underpin a lot of these future developments. Brian Kruger, the chairman of Racing Victoria, with me. We'll be back after this. Racing Pulse, a special edition with Racing Victoria's Brian Kruger. A couple of quick ones, Brian, because I appreciate your time this morning. What's the latest with the wagering licence?
Yeah, so I think you'd be aware, and most people would be aware, that the government sort of doing what I'd call a reset of the expressions of interest process. I think the fact that Tabcorp have been very, very busy with their demerger process has probably slowed things up a bit more than some of us would like. But interestingly, there's been a lot of movement in the last few months with some new players coming into the market or announcing they'll be coming into the market. So hopefully we've got some more competition there for the license. I know there's a bit of interest there. Our hope and objective is that we've still got a decision made around the licence within the next sort of 6 to 9 months. I've spoken to you before, Michael, about the need for the licence, the new licensee to be known. If it is a new licensee, it was not Tabcorp, but the new licensee to be known sooner rather than later, because we can't wait until 2024 when the current licence expires. I think for obvious reasons, people will stop investing if Tabcorp don't have the certainty. Logically, they would stop investing. The whole range of other issues with an extension to that period of time. So I think the sooner the better. The government understands that. I think they had a good reason for, restarting the expressions of interest process. But all hands on deck to try to get that done as quickly as we can.
We've got a new Racing Victoria CEO, Andrew Jones, who starts mid-July. I'd imagine that there's a handover period with Giles, who leaves the post. And do you see anything new, any change of views with the new CEO coming into play?
Yeah, so the good news is Andrew's bought a house down here, so because he's a Sydney resident at the moment, but he bought a house, so he's still committed to the job, despite everything that's going on, so that's good news. Look, we're thrilled to get him. He's got a lot of experience across business, sports administration, very, very strong from a strategy point of view. He's started his career at a major consultancy firm called McKinsey, so The other thing is he's also been intimately involved in helping us develop and then implement our media strategy. So he's got a good knowledge of the industry already and knows a lot of the players. So I think he'll be able to hit the ground running when he starts in early July. I would want to take this opportunity to thank Giles. We'll probably do that a bit more over coming weeks as we get to his finish date. But I think he's done an amazing job. A lot of achievements they're getting us through COVID, which we've spoken about previously. The wagering growth and prize money growth that we've had under his watch has been phenomenal. A lot of infrastructure projects, the media assets consolidation. Obviously dealing with some very difficult issues like the Aquanita issue and the Darren Weir issue, those sort of things were major challenges for all of us. But I think, overall, in a very difficult job, Giles has done a great job. In terms of any changes, that'll be up to AJ or Andrew, AJ as we call Andrew, to come in and assess things. And he's already started that process. He's already out talking to people, some of the key players out there to get their views on what things are going well and where they think there's some opportunities to do things a bit differently. So he'll come in and hopefully hit the ground running in early July.
Is there hope that with Andrew's appointment that we may have some news or some breaking of bread with Racing New South Wales? Is there any movement on that front and Racing Australia?
Look, when there's new people, there's always new opportunities to look at relationships, I guess. So time will tell. Look, on Racing Australia, and I'm not sure whether I've spoken to you subsequent to John Massara announcing his resignation from the chairman role, but that was very disappointing from our perspective. So I think the Racing Australia team are working well enough at keeping the lights on at the moment around, things like data and the stud book and these sort of things. But as far as I'm concerned, we're not making much progress on some of the really key longer-term issues around patent and equine welfare and consistency in rules of racing and some of the changes we'd like to see there. So, we're still working on that. I'll repeat what I've said to you previously. I do think the right long-term solution here to make Racing Australia more functional, irrespective of who the players are, is that we change the way the voting structure works so that we can't have one state, whether that's us or New South Wales or any other state, being able to sort of impose its will on how the body operates. So I'm very keen on seeing constitutional change, and we're still looking at options around how that might work. But short answer to your question, the lights are on, but those real strategic issues, not a lot of progress at the moment.
No, absolutely. One last one, which is an SMS that's been repeated a few times from different listeners. Just on the Caulfield, last question. Were punters consulted with the new design by the MRC or Racing Victoria?
I don't know that we've gone to punters, but certainly to talk to them specifically. The Melbourne Racing Club may have done that. I'm not aware of whether they have or not. But there's been a lot of work with experts on track design and issues around bias and fair racing and all those sort of things, which I think are all of the things that punters would tell us they want to see. So whilst there hasn't been, certainly I'm not aware that Racing Victoria, Melbourne Racing Club may well have spoken to punters or punting groups, but what we have done is talk to a lot of experts that understand things that are important to punters and make sure we've factored that, and Melbourne Racing Club has factored that into their considerations around the track design.
Brian, appreciate your time. We covered a lot of ground today, and it's going to be a very big decision coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
And we'll look forward to seeing this green paper.
Yep.
Thank you, Brian. Brian Kruger, the chairman of Racing Victoria. Quick break. I'll go through a few SMSs. Matt Stewart with his take coming up next.